interrupting the current neo-Euclidean, climate-changed, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricket Toot Busting Episode BTWRLM 506. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport. So get you behind the woodshed. It's you stepping up to protect yourself against all these insane things that are going on. Actually, that makes it easy if we knew where to look to show that wasn't supposed to happen. As we keep going on, these people coming against us don't have a basis, one, to start with. And I don't know why that hasn't caught on, that observation hasn't caught on. Other than after the trying to deal with the effects, the consequences of their actions. And what I'm trying to show is that there's a way to get ahead of that. They may start wrong, and you can point out they had no way to start right. And that starts us to get to the right answer a lot quicker. Instead of being involved in entertained by the theater that we see around us. But part of that theater, again, is people not understanding the most basic things about their reality. This is one of the themes today. Maybe we should pay attention more to that and then work from that so that we're not led as a society by the nose into the water to be drowned. The interesting thing to me is that eventually, so-called science gets around to it, but it's not science. It's a bunch of people pretending to be scientists for a long time, and we're going to hear that right here. As I move the conversation from last week into this week, I didn't get to all the tabs to close off the themes of the ideas I wanted to point out to you. But here we have, starting today, a mystery. A mystery, folks. I can't believe how we have existed without knowing it. It's a mystery, only to some. You've heard about this behind the woodshed, and so it's not a mystery at all. But this is what they want to propose to people to make them sound like they're just coming out with something. What I want to point out to you is if they don't know this, there's nothing on the earth that they know about weather, climate, or any of that stuff. Now we find, and it's a mystery for that the temperature patterns uncovered in Jupiter's atmosphere have patterns. The researchers now seek to determine why the temperature patterns occur on the particular timescales that they take up. They take place on particular timescales. And those timescales are not subject to the position of the planet or anything else. So we're finding out, as we read here, a team of researchers led by Glenn Orton of NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab has managed to discern the patterns of how temperatures on the biggest planet in the solar system change over time. The results come having analyzed data supplied by NASA's missions to Jupiter and obtained through ground-based telescope observations. So, we're looking out there. They have no idea to look behind their own woodshed. Like the guy behind the woodshed does, just looks out behind and looks at the weather, and we can see stuff going on. These people have to go look at another planet to find out that during their work, which started back in 1978, we're talking about milking a system. Now, researchers determined that temperatures in Jupiter's troposphere, the lowest layer of the atmosphere where clouds form, increase and decrease, quote, following definite periods that aren't tied to the seasons or any other cycle scientists know about. The team also noticed a peculiar link between the temperature changes as when things literally got hotter at certain latitudes in Jupiter's northern hemisphere, they also got cooler at the same latitudes in the planet's southern hemisphere. Now, I don't know why they're not looking out their back door and seeing the same thing happening on Earth. But it's a mystery, folks, that there is a long-term change in climate on planets. It's right here that I'm going to suggest to you strongly to understand. If they don't know until now that these cycles are on, they didn't put it in their models. They can't possibly know about the weather on this planet, on their planet Earth, at all. That have been going on and are going on. That ought to have been in all the models they've been using. And when it wasn't, maybe they got a problem with their models. Maybe. And it's a mystery, folks, that this balancing act that happens on Earth, naturally, without anybody input, and despite, understand, despite the human, the anthropomorphic damage that were being caused, these changes happen over a long time, and they happen naturally, is a problem for us when we have people that want to tweak the environment, tweak the atmosphere, without perfect knowledge. Without a clue as to what's going on. Even though, pretty clear to the guy behind the woodshed. and I, not that it's a, much of an expert, but I got my, started cutting my teeth in meteorology, if I can say that, based on an uncle who was in the Navy who brought home his meteorological curriculum. And he brought it home and said, maybe you'd be interested in this. And I, like an information sponge, I gobbled it up. So this is when I was very, very, very young, picking up things about the our atmosphere and having some basic understandings, at least what I could at the time. It carried me over fairly well. You've heard me talk about a bit about these that have started from that early beginning. Again, the impressionable beginnings. That there are things that we just don't know, and there are things that we do know. And when we start, when I can start looking out and seeing that there's people who call themselves experts and scientists who don't apply what anybody behind a woodshed can see for themselves, we are dealing in a double danger. One is that they don't know what the heck they're talking about, and they're given expert status. And number two is whatever they come up with may be wrong for us, which allowed me to see early on that we had to be careful and think for ourselves, not just sit there and think and twiddle our thumbs, but understand that there's people out there that they make money and they waste time doing things that are a mystery to them, but common knowledge to everybody else. And they are somehow given the authority because they've been doing the study that anybody can find out if they just look even halfway. That we have these startups, and this is not new news, but it's beginning to happen. And even in the question, they're saying it. A startup says it begins releasing particles in the atmosphere in an effort to tweak the climate. If they didn't know that there was long-term balancing provisions going on a planet, and in particular it happens on Earth, with a better atmosphere, then what are they tweaking? Then how do they know how much to tweak and to tweak at all? It should be a major concern for you because it's your life. And I think these are the kinds of stories that I've been telling you before. If we're going to apply, give these people any credit, these psychopaths any credit, to apply the precautionary principle, this would be where it would be. Make Sunsets is a company, apparently. Make Sunsets is already attempting to earn revenue for geoengineering, a move likely to provoke widespread criticism. Well, the spread criticism has already been there. And I've explained to you, if you ever see one of these notices in the paper, which is what they're supposed to do, I think it's under Title 50, they have to do this stuff, that you have a right to complain or put your notice back to them to say, don't do it. And then, you know, those of you who have listened to me, you do have remedy in the courts, which some of you don't really appreciate hearing about any further. But it is there that I think people need to start exercising just to get the muscle memory on how we respond to these kinds of threats. These are the existential threats that they are admitting to now doing experiments to well, put in their words, geoengineering refers to a deliberate efforts to manipulate the climate by reflecting more sunlight back into space, mimicking a natural process that occurs in the aftermath of large volcanic eruptions. In theory, spraying sulfur and similar particles in sufficient quantities can potentially ease global warming. Well, if they're tweaking something they have not the basic understanding about, and their models wouldn't include all this, how would they know that they're tweaking, and how do they then know that there's actually a global warming going on? And I mean outside of the natural variability, which is not known to man. In other words, all our weather is still within a natural aspect, even though man is involved. That they are tweaking your environment and not using the precautionary principle through something that they call solar radiation management. I've talked about this a lot, not necessarily at an exhaustive length, but it's not so obvious sometimes because of the promotion that people don't know what they're doing and they're kind of messing in a system they have no clue about. That they make a claim for global warming when there is no knowledge of that thing in existence. And then they get the word today that it's a mystery that there's a natural balancing cycles across a planetary surface is actually kind of scary to me. So what the problem here is, not even the science, even if they did it as a test, and I'm sure that they may send some balloons up. See, this is the other question here in this story. It's a question whether or not they're actually doing it, and that isn't adequate as well. But even if they're going to do a little bit, they're claiming they want to be cautious to example a natural process. Doesn't mean that they're in position, their injection of a thing that they might have mimicked and theorized is a natural process really is. But the solar radiation management is based on a fraud. And it's based on a tool to impose something called sustainability. Solar radiation management, right or wrong or indifferent, doesn't address the underlying political nature that climate change, capital C, that climate change is. It's a political assault. It's a political usurpation. It has nothing to do with the weather, as you've heard me say, and show, hopefully, to you. Solar radiation management, right or wrong or indifferent, doesn't address the Malthusian mental illness that these people want to do. These are the folks that think the planet is too overpopulated, so they got to limit that population. Neither does it address the psychopathic philanthropists that are implementing it, intending to transform life as we know it on this planet. They're just not going to address all these things. Again, that's the theater in the sky, while on the ground they're intending to kill everyone or make life very difficult. Typical of the disorder, these organized criminals are the existential threat facing Americans that they accuse us of being. Until you understand that, until we figure out a way to get at that, I'm not sure this goes away very quickly. But these enemies are within our structure. They've metastasized throughout it. Or if what's going on in Congress is any partial clue right now, it's really the underpinnings of this, the underbelly of this is what's driving it. The Congress is bought. If we haven't figured it out, Congress is bought, no matter who appears to run the place. Okay, this is people who listen to me probably already know that. The thing is, it's moving on, and it's going to hurt. It's killing, and maybe. That's all they mean to do. If I need to say it, if it hasn't been said, the bulk of those in seats of decision today, across the nation, the United States of America, mean to kill and maim. If you didn't notice what the Covey swindle did, what they did in a so-called reset, using that as a cover. It's not the thing, it's a tool. Or the exposure of the governmental corruptions. It's being laid bare for us, and again, like Operation Hindsight 2020, back in, I was talking to at 2019, this is now, will we act? We're being shown how it works. And we're going to need, on both sides, a great attitude correction that needs to go on. Not just that we see it and we know it. And that should be, we think that's good enough because it's not. But the other side has to be convinced that going down that path is a little bit too criminal even for them. And part of that is understanding that, well, they are us. Although we are all together. And being divided is how we're going to be defeated. And so at some point, we're going to have to figure out how to get at the attitudes that brought up. They agreed with a criminal attack against them. They agreed to allow people with imperfect knowledge, claim to have perfect knowledge, and a solution that may not have ever been needed because there was never a problem that wasn't within the variability of nature already. And to this, I'm speaking to a communication stuff. What came along with the solar radiation management is couple of admissions about what's going on. That should warn us off. That should warn off anybody who even thought it was a good idea. I have an article here to read. It's solar radiation management from the Wilson Center. First paragraph, first sentence, solar radiation management, SRM, is an idea born of desperation. And then they're going to explain how this desperation is built, but it's all based on this supposed climate change, climate crisis condition, which is declared by a bunch of people, the scientists of which apparently didn't know that a planet system balances its heat and cold, top to bottom, east to west, in cycles. They say in the second paragraph, SRM is a speculative form of climate change response. Speculative. Talk about conspiracy theory. Well, this is a killer decision. This is a thing that will kill people if they get it wrong. And we should be applying, at least if we give them credit at all, their precautionary principle. Maybe we shouldn't touch what we don't understand. Maybe we shouldn't touch what we don't know is not broke. We shouldn't make up brokenness with wokeness, I guess. So this is a very important thing. This is not new news. They're starting to send a balloon to spray stuff in the sky. They say sulfur, and there's all kinds of materials. I went through a couple of broadcasts explaining the materials they could put up and all the incredible science that comes from particulates in the atmosphere. Really astonishing things. The conversion factor, there's conversions that go on, energy conversions within this stuff. It's very, very interesting. But based on an idea that from people that found it was a mystery that the temperature can balance itself in a planetary system, we need to pull this decision away from these people. They're trying to justify their ignorance to be an existential threat, which they admit is substantially speculative and born out of, if you will, a self-inflicted fear, not born by anything that science could actually support. So what I found interesting in this next story was that attitude shifting, trying to get people who are set in their ways, the most staunchest, the most advocating of this system, that pretends to believe they understand, they have perfect knowledge of a system that actually conflates a lot of things in a subject matter that's not even about the weather. When you talk about climate change, again, it is a political transformation of all systems, governmental systems in the world, to a governance system. Then I found this next story pretty interesting. My Christmas Gift to Greta, written by Ray Jason. And this was an interesting guy who found coincidence in the life experience of himself and Greta relative to sailing, and uses this as a communication vehicle to try and explain to her whether she'll read it or not. It's not his point here. He's just going to write it and hope maybe she sees it. That suggests maybe she was used. Maybe people was using her to and feeding her misinformation, that she taking together their common experiences, say singular sailors, I said, suppose, going across oceans, and having to look up at the sky at night and seeing the same stars and the clarity of those stars, that maybe this would be an opportunity for him to communicate to her that maybe she needs to take a fresh look at what she's been told. And she needs to take a look at the things of reality that that he can show that she needs to look at, and then maybe make a new decision. I thought was a very interesting tact, and part of a communication style that can work, that I think people need to see. Again, my Christmas gift to Greta was Ray Jason's discussion to Greta that maybe she's been used. Maybe she doesn't have the reality. Maybe she has to look a little bit closer, because his experience shows a totally different picture when you get reality involved, when you get on the open ocean, when you get on the ground, when you get into places and actually have to deal with what's going on. If you want to become an adventurer, life is tough. Nature is there and rigorous. And through that, he's communicating to her, which I would hope she would listen to. Because I can look out, get out behind a woodshed, and I'm going to tell you, climate varies. Climate varies a lot, and when you get into oceanography, as I did for a while, a long, long time ago, you find these cycles in the system. And when the people came out just after that to start promoting this so-called climate change without understanding all that, I realized that this was a scam. And so, again, it takes information, and it takes the ability to apply it. And so I think, again, my Christmas gift to Greta was this authorship to help other people, not just Greta. She may not be changeable, but others maybe look at and maybe relook. Right? Take a second look at what's going on. Start becoming a little bit more grounded, if you will, based on realities of things. Yes, the climate changes. Now, what do we do with it? Do we conflate pollution that we may be able to do things with? Do we cause rules and regulations put on industry that they can't meet, even though the law is not supposed to be put that hard? As I've told you before, concrete plant being pressed by the EPA of the state, which is just a federal EPA agency, they did not look scientifically at a reality problem. They insisted that a company put more money into removing mercury from the air than it was thought that the company, concrete company, was creating. And a colleague of mine, I was told about it. I talked to him. I said, well, what is there something here that we can kind of help on? It was somewhat like mining, because they're the processing of a mining product. And he'd seen that type of problem before, and he asked their attorney to have him check whether or not they had checked the intake air for mercury concentration, and it turned out that they hadn't. What it turned out to actually be was the government was imposing upon a production company for concrete, which is a staple of your life, the construction and infrastructure for your the physical part of your life. The agency could care less about doing any science. It could care less about what people knew, that you should measure the intake air, and found out that the intake air was polluted. The air intake air had the more excessive mercury in it than even the company was making. And so they were being tried to be forced to clean even the environment, which was naturally high in the mercury. So the reality is that you may have aspirations, but there's certain, if you don't understand the environment you're in and you think you can change and tweak the environment, maybe you're causing trouble. And I'm hoping this little letter, which I found interesting, an interesting conversation, will be picked up by more people and hopefully Greta herself. I don't like to see people misguided and then become their own problem. Because it's a reality that bites. It comes back, it's going to slap you right in the face. As you hear the sailor talking about going through the Northwest Passage, the Arctic Passage, they said it was not going to be any ice, and that's all they found. If you don't deal with, understand reality and plan for it, you're not going to last long. And the reflection of that comes back on you. You end up having to do extra work and more, and it's more expensive, as we find, notwithstanding all the carbon that they want to pull out the earth, even though we're carbon-based life here, which is these psychopaths think that's the problem. Again, in a system they don't have perfect knowledge of, which you don't even have to have a speck of knowledge about to find out that they're wrong anyway. But we find out that the trying to force unnatural things on a natural system causes things like German coal consumption soaring. Right in the news, what they're trying to push away, they claim, is what comes on them. Energy shortages and surging power prices have pushed Germany to boost coal use despite the country's commitment to fighting climate change. And here we have the commitment to fighting climate change is the fraud. But what it does is a boomerang effect and the prices go up. And what does that do? That just causes you to believe that we have something to check, that we have something to control. In fact, their green energy program didn't work. And we'll find out here as we move into the United States, it didn't work. It doesn't work as well either because Mother Nature's tougher. Mother Nature has a whole lot more to go on. But you heard the surging power prices. This is a dynamic that's set into play ahead of time. That they know this is going to go on. And so there's opportunists and plunderers that sit in the background. And this story came up right with that. And you're going to hear this story about the increasing consumption later on. There's just a natural response to this. Modern societies need energy. When you artificially hold it back, well, you watch what happened to Russia. You hold it back and all of a sudden the prices go up and you have spikes in lack of supply. Dropping in supply, but lack of supply shows up, and it's all artificial. And the exploiters, the opportunists step in, and we see it here, where this net zero has to do with the carbon, and it has to do with an economy. And it has to do with what's coming up in your digital gulag relative to your societal debt. You call social credit. Credit is debt. It's a social debt. You owe to society. You, my listener, will owe to society. And that's what sets you up without a presumption of innocence. But we see that the opportunists, the investors, the global people that have gotten just monstrous in their capacity, their influence, are found under scrutiny to be using all these things as the narrative scam cover to allow them to plunder more. As we see, BlackRock, State Street admit signing net zero pledges they don't act on. The story coming on the heels of Vanguard pulling out before of the committee that they were on, the organization, pulling out, that they could not support that with their investors looking down the road. During a marathon ESG hearing, a state senator tells them, you can't serve two masters. Well, this is a senator who may not know what he's doing, or he's a change agent, because the CEOs only have to have one master, and that's their shareholder. And that's all they're offering, looking at is profit. So where we might look at, that's pretty noble about the senator. That's really misdirection, because BlackRock only has a duty to their shareholders. And who is BlackRock? And this is what comes in about the global players and their power, how much influence they come in and what they can do. Just looking quickly, BlackRock Incorporated is an American multinational investment company based in New York City, founded in 1988. initially as a risk management and fixed income institutional asset manager. BlackRock is the world's largest asset manager with $10 trillion in assets, $10 trillion with a T, under management as of January 2022. BlackRock operates globally with 70 offices in 30 countries and clients in 100 countries. Along with Vanguard and State Street, BlackRock is considered to be one of the big three index fund managers that dominate corporate America. Dominate corporate America. This is in policy as well, and this is in what they do. And so this is a nobody to mess around with when they're fraudulently portraying a thing they present to everybody, and they're not actually doing it. But this is more, the net zero pledging is a fraud anyway. And so to think that they would be actually implementing it is kind of a joke to begin with. But remember, as we hear in the Germany story, the power prices are being pushed up. This is also going to be something that, underneath the climate existential threat of climate change because of global warming, when the government tries to come in, that's the power it gets. When it tries to bring the benefit to the masses of a problem it sees for the masses, attacking the masses, that it then can tax to quell that attack. This is the power of how the power of taxation is created. If the government shows that there's a public need, a general need, and it steps in to solve against a thing that's a utility, a thing that's in the world, it then can pull a tax. Let's say alcoholism is a problem with selling alcohol. They can tax that. They tax it, and they supposedly put that money toward helping to stop alcoholism, whether that's a simple promotions, you know, ads or whatever, or programs. And that's just no more another funding stream for the opportunists to come in and take a piece of. But first of all, you have to have a harm in the society general enough that it takes the government to stop it, and then the people who cause that are taxed. Well, that's you when you're talking carbon and your need for energy. And so these people, the BlackRock, are saying that this is a big fraud. We're not even following it, and they admit it. But the senator, who's supposed to be on dog on the hunt, he says you can't serve two masters, which sounds pretty noble, but they only follow the one master, which is their shareholder. And so they're not doing anything wrong. That's why they're not found to be wrong. And these groups, not people, but you know, the people, corporations are people too. These are very powerful in the world. So powerful that we can watch them moving through the world and cause and effect. Again, they're in the pinnacle of where this utilizing climate change, again, transforming governments through their use. And remember the public-private partnership problem. Remember, we also can hear through the CAFR how that is worked and integrated. As I talked to you about leverage funding, you see that working. Then we find out if you revisit Clint Richardson's Corporation Nation, you see how incestuous this whole condition is relative to who invests in what, the government's involved in the boards and on the boards and how this all works. But we see these investment houses, and getting back to the risk management, see, BlackRock started in risk management. That's what this stuff is, as I tell you, as example through wildfire. It's no longer fire suppression, it's fire management. And they do by risk management. They adjust what they're doing through that. And so these people started already in that field and some sustainability, and now they haven't really moved much of anywhere. They are taking opportunities as they can manipulate or are manipulated for them to do the investments and getting involved. That we find as bankers, as you will, funding wars. We see why this statement may be very important, and to shine another type of light over Ukraine, BlackRock accuses of trying to cash in on the disaster with Ukraine reconstruction deal. This company is so big it can set up loans for reconstruction. It's a pretty interesting thing to hear. There they are, right in the thick of it, and we've heard, again, the government corruption relative to Ukraine and the financing. And who was involved in that, and the FTX blows up, and today's a bunch of leaks are going to show a lot of this integration working just as I thought the FTX might be a setup to bring in all these other things. But there again, BlackRock's right in the play. They're going to be a reconstruction deal with Ukraine. Well, I guess that's looking in and predicting that Russia's not going to take that whole country over, which is another thought. It doesn't look like they may want to, so all those drum beats are going on. Maybe it'll be Poland that takes up some. Who knows? You know, who knows what the pieces and parts are going to be when it's all said and done. But these investment bankers, if you will, these so-called risk management people, They're right there with like a banker, like a normal banker, to give money to Ukraine. And these companies, these investment companies looking for the shareholder profit, utilizing the cover that something called climate change, sustainability offers, the little programs they set up like net zero are just used to be able to abuse the condition. And eventually when you get some scrutiny on it, you find out that's exactly what it was. Credit to the senator, but he's presenting the wrong problem relative to what he should be focused on. At any rate. So we get over to another problem, another official, a state attorney general, a bar member no less, of an organization that promotes sustainability too, which is an interesting thought and observation. State AGs sound the alarm about BlackRock Vanguard buying large stakes in utilities. Berkshire Hathaway vice president says he doesn't want Larry Fink to be my emperor. And so we see now it's getting, these organizations are so powerful that they can do what? They're coming in and exploiting a condition. The rising prices are happening in the states, and so they invest in utilities. The acquisition by investment managers BlackRock and Vanguard of ever-increasing shares of Americans' public utility companies is setting off alarm bells for conservatives and progressives alike. I'll let you read the story on how this has all worked, but these people are right here to scavenge up what they can do, to take opportunities where they are. And these are all, again, anticipatory issues. They didn't, just make up the idea, we're going to get utilities. They knew when they flicked the self-inflicted wounds, they cut out Russia. They also know that they can pretend to have supply chain problems. All of a sudden, the United States is helpless for itself, and now the United States can't get its own heat and energy, and the prices have to go up. It didn't hurt that they had cut out some more hydropower plants. Right? It doesn't hurt that they can almost predict the future a bit about how these weathers happen. Every winter we get a winter. If you know that the cycle that they talked about that they just found out is a mystery that operates over there on Jupiter happens on Earth, you can kind of look at some of these. We've talked about them. People kind of laugh. And so in the 1970s they said there was going to be a winter, nuclear winter stuff. And now they shifted to the global warming. Well, there was some proof that it could go global winter, a global solid hard winter. And they were timing it out at about 2030 or so. And can't say that it's really on mark, but boy, I don't know about you, but there's been quite a few winters now that have been pretty solid. Not outside of the variability. They get colder. But they are pretty good, and if you can predict a bit of that, if you know those cycles are coming, you can jump in front of all that. They knew by cutting out the fossil fuels, causing it to be a pollutant, if you will, and the government's coming in to tax it eventually, and then you jump in on utilities with the ever-increasing price, that your returns are going to be good. So they're doing just what they're supposed to do under the law, but there's no check and balance anymore relative to these companies. You see how big their investments get. Dealing in fraud is really the name of the game now. So, why would BlackRock and Vanguard be buying up unless there's a profit to be made? They just don't go give a largesse to everybody. As we hear that the United States Energy Department declares emergency in Texas amid power shortage, this is an indicator. Well, first of all, we had that big cold thing that went through Texas. I told you they weren't going to learn a thing. They weren't going to figure it out. They were going to have this thing happen to them more over and over. We found out they were consolidated. Well, Texas apparently is they are the greenest, if you will. They have the most so-called green technology, which is not, but it's alternative energy generation. So this is kind of an interesting little model to watch. Despite all that the differentiation of power generation, they were still crippled again. So green is not an answer, first of all. And even if our knowledge, even with our knowledge of the intent to remove fossil fuels, you can't. It's just like Germany found. You're going to find the rest of the world the same way. What they did here, though, was interesting. They had to lift the environmental restrictions in order so they can do more coal, do more fossil fuels. And so against reality, you see there's adjustment. It's not absolute. But in fact, they aren't looking into the future. And they cause their own problems that causes a shortage on energy. And our man-made systems still can't cope. All of them seem to have a problem when Mother Nature decides to freeze you out. There's some system failure. I don't understand why they can't solve a lot of them. But there's some system failure within a system of generation that in this case, is affected by the cold. And so we see that man is not it doesn't anticipate the future very well, even though we understand, well, we deny we understand variability, but I guess we still deny variability. It came a second time and Texas wasn't ready. And they aren't going green, they can't. It was very interesting to read through and look at some of the numbers, and I did a little bit of checking, but it was very interesting that what didn't come back quick apparently was very much the same percentages of all the green technology, like windmills. Those didn't come back real fast. When they all went down, what came back first was the fossil fuels. So if we're looking at reality, if we want to start taking a picture of what reality does, noticing we're in a negative turn for temperature on a variability scale, planetary variability scale, whether we understand it or not, we are going to have to diversify. That's the word I was missing. Diversify this, and still we're going to be susceptible, but it doesn't look like green can come back quick. And when you think about it, it really can't. You got these, if it's wind turbines, you're not going to be able to, you know, the ice on the blades and whatever is not going to be slinging so well. In fact, you probably got to shut them down. The snow or whatever on top of the solar panels or under clouds isn't going to work so well. You have to have all these alternatives. Modern reality is such as it is. You can't change that. You can't, how dare you, into non-existence the needs of a society. All these need to come to bear. And they have their own consequences. But we see BlackRock is right in the point of it. And this is what I want to point out about this. This is an economic attack. Climate change is political. It's economic. All nations run on, the actual energy that they run on isn't fossil fuel. It's your monetary system. So in this integration with Ukraine and CEO of BlackRock, he tells us, well, his integration for reconstruction loans for that country, he mentions that Ukraine war spells the end of globalization. Well, I don't necessarily agree with him, because the end of globalization was seen where when you started getting the big news about the supply chains being broke. Because globalization is the international interdependence of nations upon other productive nations. And the supply chain, the links of a chain that allow a nation to survive when they have to do that. That was broke. What they say, the Ukraine war spells the end of globalization, is a finality, is what I would agree, that Russia, I told you, did this. They decided that they prepared for it to be able to break the interdependence of the monetary system that kept them captive. The same thing I was telling you, you're going to have to figure out a way to get rid of the chain to the digital gulag coming, and or even other things that have been here, to move away from it. He says that, and spells it, he acts like some prophet saying it's the end of globalization. Well, globalization was another tool, and they did break it, and those chains did break, and now you're watching, because of that, the reordering of the world, if you will, into a bipolar mental breakdown. And we then bring up the idea why BRICS becomes important, and the SDR condition, and the moving of power and economic power through the world. He's, again, being a force to be reckoned with in the investment world. You would listen to him, but he's not saying anything that anybody else can see. The breakage of globalization is not the destruction of globalism, which is very healthy, and we know it's very healthy because of what they continue to do, and they keep promoting climate change or sustainability or any of these other things that these opportunists, these like BlackRock and Vanguard, are repositioning themselves around and continually doing that in order to, if you will, keep on the right side of law. That's a very dangerous thing. But we see that globalism is not breaking down, where he talks about globalization is broken, utilizing the Ukraine war. We can look at Russia, and I told you, they're setting up a new system, but they're not going away from globalism. And we see now, despite all the odds, I guess you could say, but certainly not what I've been saying behind the woodshed, despite everybody's dismayed that this thing's coming on that fast, we are seeing the fulfillment of what they needed to do and where they needed to go. The future is now. Bank of Russia may launch digital ruble before the end of the year. This statement was made on the auspices of a bill being presented before the end of the year last year to the Duma in Russia that would regulate the rules of digital currency circulation. And that then within that bill, it says that the citizen of Russia will have access to this system by April. So they already have a digital ruble. It's going to be working. This is not something they just invented last month because they were in denial. It's something they've been working on. And if you read through the stories, if you read, you'll see these central banks have been working on this for quite a long time. While I was getting grief for saying so, these countries were doing this. So right to the citizen, right directly to the citizen, you get a digital connection and you'll need a digital ID. They've already got their system worked out. It's called a digital ruble. Now, in the United States, we just got to the central banks are working interbank, inter-clearinghouse system. They're working that out right now while they're claiming that to us, the people may not see it, but they're already telling us that it's going to go to the Fed. The central bank will be getting your business directly through a trust situation. And it's going to be, they're a private, essentially just an instrumentality in a private condition, not really the government. So it's a really a kind of interesting problem for us in America eventually. Russia's already moving to their digital currency. They show a little bill in the paper, but in an article, but they're moving to a digital code currency system that's going to be available to people. And they're going to do it incrementally so no one's quickly scared off. You can get cash, like you can get cash or other things with it, but that's only to get you buying into it like we did in America when they got your fiat dollar. Used to be tradable in silver, used to be gold and silver, now nothing. Now you're going to be lucky that it's tradable at all here if we're not careful, and I mean really careful, as all the countries are moving this thing along, that we see that's a permanency for Russia, where Russia-led trade bloc will soon stop using the dollar. Just as I've been talking about for over a decade would be happening, just using the headlines in the news and the stories behind them a bit to explain the Eurasia Economic Union, the EUU members, are boosting settlements in national currencies and only use the greenback in statistics, quote, out of habit, close quote, the foreign minister said. This is Sergey Lavrov telling us, Russia's cut loose. It's done. It's just a matter of time. Again, out of habit that we're doing this, but that habit will be changing, I'll tell you. They won't say that, but certainly that's what he's saying, that the habit will be changed here soon as we get more and more countries to start just dealing in their own currency and cut ourselves away from this Western, what they call hegemony. They're going to hegemony that's actually going to go bipolar. Good cop, bad cop has to be maintained, but this is definitely a difference in the world that the United States doesn't have now that preeminence. Again, all part of the plan of how this ends up working through. And so Russia is telling everybody that it's a matter of time very quickly and shortly that the United States dollar doesn't have what it did. And there's going to be this move. This is moving into digital ruble allows you to see it is globalism, because the countries still have to deal with each other no matter if there's sanctions or not. And I'll show you that coming up here, how that doesn't seem to matter, the sanctions, at some level. But this protection thing, this alternative system, again, I talked about it. We talked about the SDR, the special drawing rights, the basket of currencies. It's underpinned by gold, but it's not supported by gold in the way we think it is. It's just another value thing that's in the world that helps to maintain the value of the things in the basket, so to speak, the currencies in the basket. The SDRs are international governmental exchanges, not for the people. You and I will be eventually, if we agree, we'll be utilizing these digital tokens, I'll call them. But that's a form. The United States has been in this transition. We've already been in a system that has been fictional, not the fiat, but I mean a fictional condition. We already have, you hear it, social credit, but you already had your credit score. Credit means debt. In the United States, credit means debt. So you had a debt score, and if your debt score wasn't good enough to cover the debts that you had, you can't get a job now. You couldn't get a rental. You can't likely buy a car. You can't get a loan. I mean, it's just very difficult if you could. You're charged way extra because your credit score is not good. Well, just add social to that, and you'll understand where the future goes is that you owe a debt to everybody else. You owe a debt to your society. You are not free and innocent up front. Your debt loaded because of this carbon imposition, because of this climate change, this transformation. That this dollar being used is just a transition to get to the digital side. And they're telling us now, Russia's, we're separate. We got a bunch of people we're working with. We don't need that anymore. And yet, they're integrated because they're all going digital. At some point, those facilities have to interact. This makes it difficult for us in America. You think we can be self-reliant or self-sufficient. No matter if we still have 30% of the population that didn't buy into Kobe swindle. So there's a body of people there that might be able to get together and do some things for themselves. However, inside the United States, and you cloister up and you start doing your work, if you don't produce 100% of what you need, you're going to have to go outside of that little cell, whatever that area is. It could be a goodly size. The point is that when you don't make your own, you have to go out. To go out and into the United States, being in the United States, you're going to have to interact with those that are dealing with that system. You're going to have some of those dollars in your pocket, too. You have to be tied into that system. And so your industry or your manufacturers or your businesses will likely have to be compromised. And as soon as they have to do that, the system becomes compromised. So I don't see this as being a typical and easy thing to do. We watch the nations coming together, as we see South Africa, to navigate BRICS as a deglobalization and Western decline continue. Deglobalization is what they're doing. That's what this is about. South Africa leading this BRICS condition, this organization, is important. And as the focus, like it was a pivot to China, well, now the value is moving to Africa. The dollar is not going to be used here. This is a completely separate condition. We're going to be left holding that bag. Those of us inside that see it that want to go back to gold and silver, you'd likely go to silver coin, typically for hand stuff, because that's known value. Right? That's the only thing we know. That's the way we can trust. It's not, I don't think it's counterfeit that way. If it's minted and you don't have an indication that it's not the things they put into coined money, are the checks and balances that we can use to trust. But once you move outside that to get something you don't have, you will be like what you heard Russia saying, to deal with us, you need the ruble. If you have a region, an area of people, the countryside, that have come together to be separate from all this nonsense. You have to reach out. They're going to demand that you use their funds, just like we see the ruble going on for oil. And that I wanted to show you, I've been saying, watch what goes on in the world, because that's what you're going to be facing. If there's going to be any chance of us showing, let's say 30% showing the absolute resistance to the status quo system moving in, the transformation of systems and keeping our old, if you will, old, the tried and true due process driven property and rights relevant lands that aren't actually controlled by the nation. See, the United States has this interesting thing that, like, minerals are not controlled by the nation. They're actually controlled by those who find it and work it. So we'll get on to a little bit of that as we find out exactly how this works. Focusing on South Africa, focusing on the money, the dollar's going away. They're just looking at now, what do we do for value? You see this right in the news. Major lithium producer tightens export controls. Zimbabwe is considered a major lithium producer. And they're now working now to contain that value. And it seeks to prevent losses from illegal mining and to prop up the country's struggling economy. Your production is so valuable in a country, especially where you have a kind of like a monopoly on, let's say, particularly minerals. As a country, you're intelligent in order to make sure that you don't lose the value there. It is what you monetize yourself with. We get the jokes about Zimbabwe bucks, but this is how they're going to extricate themselves. And they're doing it with their control, not, let's say, the bank control or the international fund control. And they're not going to have to turn to that directly. It's going to be indirect. But nevertheless, there's a shift going on in the world about what's going on. This is proving globalization is gone. The countries are becoming more, if you will, nationalistic, protective And I think it's a good thing in a way. Except that it's actually, it helps to foment another thing that's maybe not so good. But we see a country going immediately to start to protect itself with what it produces for the world in something that's called green, which is lithium and these batteries. It's not going to let the plunderers in. It's going to plunder itself. So in the United States, that would be held over to some miner to find and discover and claim and then work. And so the money would start as a private enterprise. As the genius, if you will, of the law, the Lode Law was, the miners are the only ones that, they're like hereditary. It's in their blood, so to speak. A miner is a miner is a miner. It's just what they do. And they do it very well, and they know typically how to do it. Not all of them like this, but if you're of that kind of, for interest, you do. You have a special interest about that. And so you're pretty much the best to go about doing that, the best use for the best land. And the minerals are only where they find them. So you take the best and you go find, have the best, go find the best, and you extract the best. A lot of people say that's just destroying the earth, and yes, it does some of that. You can't help but make a hole when you're looking for minerals. It's in the rock. But the point is when you have a value, you want to be able to use it in best regard. In the United States, the individual is the powerhouse. And we've been denied that the whole time. In fact, I don't think I've had a claim here in the last decade and a half that hasn't been under oppression by the government itself, contrary to law, but we apparently don't enjoy that. Getting back to the countries know where the value is, and it's in production. It's not in all this tertiary government stuff and licensing and all that other thing. If you don't have the raw materials, you're not going anywhere. In this case, lithium happens to be the global need, right? Green. So they're sitting pretty well for all the Zimbabwe bucks jokes. This country is going and it's now rounding up its value. And right in the headline, it says it's going to prop up its struggling economy. Just this one mineral alone is how far back the United States is and what it can produce with a bunch of miners out there, private miners that are ready to go, but they're oppressed by the government itself. Another country. Look and see what these countries are doing. As globalization slips, they're starting to protect. They get nationalistic in their borders. That's why borders are kind of important here. But what we see now is the integration of countries. I never thought that they'd be into it, but here we have. Albania launches two satellites to crack down on territorial illegality. Now, fair enough. What they used, though, was SpaceX, and SpaceX has transported 6 rideshare mission from the Space Launch Complex 40. What I found interesting is the tag on this says that Albania launched its first 2 satellites, Albania 1 and Albania 2, into orbit from Cape Canaveral Space Force Station this week, hoping they will aid a crackdown on drug cultivation and other crimes. So the military is involved in allowing Albania to put some satellites up to protect its borders and its commerce. What they state up front of here is the cannabis control, but they're also looking at timber and logging and theft and all this other. So we see the nationalism of states coming together on their natural resources and using technology and in also Elon Musk's technology to further this advance. But this is going to underpin the new economy, if you will, the new future that won't be protected by the hegemony of the dollar. See, they've got to find some, they've got to look around for some asset, actual asset. It won't, like we, our idea in the United States is gold and its intrinsic value and all that, and that's there. Same thing with silver, but it also has this other value that since it is valuable and it is needed, it becomes the base of support for a new economy. And they don't have to rely, as Russia did. It started to buy gold, it started producing it. For itself, it started to look more focally to the raw material of crude oil and then natural gas and these things and the things it does, like growing grains and things, to be its base. And you see, oil, another mineral, is so valuable that when someone called sanctions and caps, it just drove their value up. So we've got a rethinking going on in the world right now, and I'm asking you all to look around in your country, and is it happening for you, or are they denying and depriving you of the things that other nations are doing? Switzerland, in the face of all the law and sanction, Switzerland boosts gold imports from Russia despite sanctions. The data from Swiss Customs showed that in November alone, gold worth hundreds of millions of dollars came into the country. So Switzerland knows what they need to do. They're now pulling it in, maybe late, but they're coming in nonetheless. The price has been going up. We're in a step now, a higher step than we were 2 years ago, interestingly. I'm just doing that analysis, and we might be going into another step up. Nothing astronomical, but yes, it's going to, the demand on for gold is and silver and metals is going to be rising dependent on its need for whatever reason, either it's industrial or for monetary monetization. But Switzerland knows what they need to do. They're following what Russia did, collecting its own gold and keeping it stored. What China did, stored it up. Trade volumes between Russia and Switzerland have surged since Ukraine-related sanctions meant to isolate Moscow were imposed. The outlet has found that the Swiss exports, dominated by pharmaceutical products, have surged by 19%, while imports from Russia jumped by 54% since the beginning of the year. So if you think that the sanctions are on a country, I guess you can just forget that. They're on you, but not these countries that are working the system. But we can take observation, that is, I still think we're a free people. We just need to know how. I don't see us flexing our muscle that way. We failed at Comey swindle, but it's still there to do. And I'm encouraging you to consider what I've been saying. It'll work out the same way. Like, in a way, for miners, it's granted to people to have money. That's work. That's not just, the government didn't invent that. It came from some miner's back end pulling it out of the bank. And so that's a property on top of it. Gold is a property. When you have it in your hand, it's not a money. It's not just an element. It's literally a property. It changes possession. So it's handled differently as well. And so there's a different thought process that goes through it. And I'm not going to say I totally fully understand it, but over the last decade or so, I've really had to rethink how do we really, we've really lost a lot in our thinking, how to think. And when we start to put our mind toward these things, it's a totally different condition to think about. And it offers a whole lot of other options that unless we start focusing in on thinking that way, we won't really see them. We can talk about them, but we won't really see them. Why Switzerland goes in, even though they're black market in a way. How is this even possible that they're going in against sanctions? Well, it might be a good and interesting analysis. This shows what Switzerland is doing to defend itself, where Sweden doesn't have a clue. Sweden going, they're on the backside of the problem. They're on the underneath the undertow of the problem. Sweden swept by major bankruptcy wave as inflation and energy crisis bite. Their so-called leaders didn't look forward. They're part of the sustainable crowd of the submission, but not part of the actual future that would keep their sovereignty. So they were on the servitude side, not on the sovereignty side. And so you're watching your economies be devoured as this thing comes on planned and underneath of particular aspects, all triggered by, they say, by Ukraine, when in fact that was triggered by the United States, not Ukraine. That was intentional. Russia said, don't do it. We're willing to give you gas and oil and all that stuff you need, so don't do it. But they did. So that's not too smart, right? That's not having, it's showing that there's another, either a plan that's either ill-advised or it's somebody believes they got the screamingest deal going and, that we've ever seen in humankind. Those creatures that we are taking advantage. As per the Swedish government itself, the Nordic country is entering enduring recession. A recession is being denied everywhere else, but they're entering one, I guess, which is expected to last until the magic year of 2025. Which everything else has been accelerated before that, but it was the target year was 2025. So this is not going to end. It's already happening. The market by a shrinking GDP and growing unemployment. I want to remind people in the United States, the GDP is that big $1.8 or so trillion dollar bill. The bill, the budget is considered a GDP. How insane this all works is just beyond me, but there it was. We actually are a pretty prosperous nation that way. But when you live in a debt system, see, everything's inverted. So it doesn't, you really can't make sense of it in a way. The people that are working it on the negative side are actually using it as exploitations, abilities to plunder. We kind of, our minds don't seem to work quite so well that way. We want to believe everything's on the up and up, even notwithstanding what we see for the last 3 years and in the government that's going on right now, the chaos that it is cool, but you're going to see it likely come to no end, no proper end, and that we should be seeing a whole lot more resistance, not just a vote, but there used to be all kinds of things like fisticuffs that went on. We see it in other countries, but when someone really has something to say, rarely, but occasionally, through history, a duel for someone's honor. And if I look around, I see all the dishonor going on, and there's not been a duel. We're not the country we thought we were. But I'm not promoting that either. I'm just saying something sort of broke on some front that shows that people really are interested in protecting. If they're in a country representing people, that they're representing people. That's something inside them that needs to be done that's been violated instead of the theater we watch. Because there's real things going on. People are going bankrupt. Nations are failing. Right next door, if you will, Switzerland is buying gold. And so the countries that are doing what they're supposed to do to protect themselves versus ones that are already subject and going to go down the tubes with this thing because they're not looking forward to too much. As we see a banker again step in to explain what your future is. And I say that particularly because I told you and I read to you Agenda 2030, and you get about 3/4 of the way through, and it says all y'all around the world are going to be debt slaves. You're going to be beholden to the debt that's put on you. And people don't understand. They think it's just money, but it's also this servitude to the social, the democracy, to the social so-called contract that you owe someone else because you are such a carbon footprint that's just abominable. But Sweden must, remember, now Sweden's going to bankruptcy, and they're suffering already. Not as smart as Switzerland, but Sweden must accept lower living standard, former central bank chief says. Just as I said and read would happen in Agenda 2030 and the austerity, that's called prosperity. Again, you're living in an inverted system where credit is debt. The capital is you. You are the product. That kind of stuff. That you will have to have a lower living standard. They're telling you exactly what that was. It's coming from a banker, and this is the economic war against us that sits underneath the underbelly of all that's going on. Why organizations like BlackRock are really at the top and the pinnacle. They're just running the script out. It's kind of like a war game. They know what's happening and where to go, and that you again, underneath the color, that you are a problem, and they need to diminish your numbers and cause you to use less, consume less. That's totally against market dynamics in a way, but that's what they want because they got a different control structure that they can put in. It's a more direct and a more tangible control structure in the new system they're bringing in. But they want to bring your standard of living down. And I want to move the standard of living over to, I think in the world, when I think of standard of living, and if they're not the worst standard of living, but the quality of life is no good in Palestine. And the authoritarianism that is silent or not spoken to, as a banker comes in and says, "Sweden, people in Sweden have to lower their standard of living." Like, who is he? But you see it happening. But you see something over in Palestine where you see these oppressors over in Israel keeping people in an open air prison, and no one talks about it. What kind of a standard of living have they been living under? I kind of thought about this when I'm looking through these stories, and then the pipsqueak pops up. Again, making a little name for itself, and they had a little election going on over there, and this starts to come up, foment some more these questions. I was talking about this country. Is that a blaspheme to say it's a country or even a state? This really is a cancer, and I think it's the way they went about it in my mind. Because I told you that all the people there seem to have an equal right to have the land, and these people are getting fortified by outsiders in order to take more than I think what's theirs. In unnatural, if you will, unnatural ways, making false claims as well. So I'm a lot critical of this part, but this Netanyahu got back into power, talking more about the standards of liberal quality of life, if you will, the authoritarianism that sits there of a banker telling you, you're going to have to lower your standard of living. Likely, he's not going to lower his standard of living. Right? So here we are. Israel's new government unveils plan to weaken Supreme Court. This is a very interesting problem. They call themselves a democracy, so-called, but when you take out the law branch, and this is not, the United States doesn't escape this for a different reason. When you take off the branch of law, And when that branch says the executive has made the law that's unconstitutional, it violates the establishment of why we're here. And you then make a law that says that the legislature can just dismiss that out of turn. If the Supreme Court says the law we made is unlawful, we can just ignore it. Is the color of a democracy, but none at all, and is authoritarian. The executive is authoritarian. And so this is a very interesting problem that was developing with the who was running along with and the deals that were made. And I'm sure we're going to hear this in the United States Congress as well, the deals that were made in order to get someone into the place they want them. In a way, I hope it's not just to show the mimicry of it, the theater of it, that it never happens. But at any rate, there's always these deals that go on. And those are the surface deals, not the ones behind. The Israeli government made deals to get Benjamin Netanyahu in, and they're going ultra-Orthodox. And they don't like the Supreme Court, so they're going to make laws that say if the Supreme Court makes a decision we don't like, as an executive, we get to say it's no good, we're going to ignore it. Is the definition of an authoritarian regime and not democratic, which the United States has been supporting for a long time. And this idea, if you will, even if it's an idea, that Israel is a state of an authoritarian state. I mean, it's also, in my view, an apartheid state. I know the people there would likely stone me if they had a chance for me just saying that. But I look at this a whole lot different, and I've went through my analysis relative to the land and how that would work. And they don't have a better right even than myself or yourself to that until it's proven their actual right and title under lawful review, not their asserted review about what their authority is. They actually go too far back relative to, you hear the word Israel, that was a man who had some sons and then two grandsons, the lands of which were given to them and the people of which we came out of. Includes lots of people, not just these groups, which aren't even the people that were there. They're actually a political idealization. So these folks here, Netanyahu and his so-called orthodoxy, is actually a Zionist front. That's not a religion. They claim it's a religion, but it's not. So we have a bunch of mishmash going on there. Talk about a mishmash like they do with climate change. This is happening over there. Well, they're going to change their democracy to where they can override a judiciary. And I know our experience here in the United States would say, okay, fine, who cares? But I'm not talking in that regard. I'm saying when you set up a government that's supposed to have checks and balances, and you have one branch that can negate the other, you no longer have that, even that fake republic or democracy at all. But this is what's going on. Now, the idea that Israel is an authoritarian state isn't even new. And this goes on and on. This shows the perpetuation of the problem, and nobody ever fixes it. And it's partly what I feel my empathy toward the Palestinian people. They're in a place that has no remedy. And that's in a world of law and order, they have to have a remedy. And no one gives them that. Even though it's historic here, decades, that people know, view, and have an opinion that this Israel thing is authoritarian. They're proving it today. But back in 2009, there was an article that says the same thing. Israel announced itself as an authoritarian state and had a proof. I'll give you a link, but I can't get to it now. It's forbidden for me somehow to get to that link. I'll give you that anyway. Hopefully you can get at it. But the point is that this statement about Israel being an authoritarian state that diminishes people's lives overall, that people agree with, even though it's diminishing their lives, is really this microcosm of witness, if we will look into it, of what we're seeing in the whole world relative to how climate change, the sustainability thing is developed and how people agree to it. And they're willing to hurt you, never ask you whether or not they even understand the condition at all. It's just, they just say this is the way it is and that's all there is and there's no scrutiny over it whatsoever. And we get to do this to everyone else. It's the same problem to me. I don't see it any different. I have there's no ethnicity here behind it. This is just a mechanism been executed, and it's repeated over and over. Now, we have evidence of this, people saying that Israel is an authoritarian state. Well, only back to 2015, and I bet there's some other articles. This is an ongoing example But I guess the problem for me is that this is kind of like what sustainability does. It's just ongoing and no one really stops it. In fact, no, they put the people back in power. Back in 2015, the title, the results are in, is Israel is an authoritarian state and we can no longer deny it. No, you can't deny it, folks, and yet nothing gets done of it. And it's all the same people. But it's interesting to me. Most all the same people were involved in keeping this thing along, and no one does anything about it. And so the authoritarianism causes a lessening of your standard of living, necessarily. And this is all I see, if you see sustainability underneath the term, these people that run these psychopaths are doing that. How we, having any self-respect, continue that against ourselves without more than a grumble is kind of an interesting thing. I don't know what to really say about that. It's just not right, not proper. And it may, again, to try and resolve ourselves now, it becomes much more work, much more work. How do we make it ourselves distinct and separate from what we find out is people who are perception managed right out of their ability to live properly. And they agree somehow that their standard of living must be reduced. Where do we go to there? How do we get there? And some of you aren't going to agree to that, but are you really doing anything to be able to keep it from you? And how are we going to really avoid it when it comes down? When they start to say, you cannot, like, at Whole, well, get there, I guess, the Whole Foods thing. You can't go into a store without this. What are you going to do? Some of you are prepared, but a lot of you are not. And I'm not talking any hyperbole here. But when you have to have a certain form of currency, a certain thing to use, what are you going to do when you don't have it? When the UN comes out on this, Israeli now calling it out, an Israeli occupation, the global court to rule on Israeli occupation, and there's no actual follow through, what good is it? How is that going to solve the problem? How does the Palestinian get remedy? How does the world get remedy? Because this is a reflection on all of us as well. Sorry, you can read the story. UN votes to global court to rule on Israeli occupation. Do we need to really rule on it? Is it a question? But then they hand it over to an international court that Israel doesn't recognize, United States doesn't recognize, nobody recognizes it, so it's toothless. So, if you don't have a remedy, then you don't have a law to follow, and then no one gives you one. And you aren't powerful enough to assert it, then what do you do? Now we're looking at Russia. Well, I told you, watch Russia. They're powerful enough to protect themselves. And look at what they're going to do. Look how they're going to solve their problem, or at least work it out in a world that has no peace, as I talked about a few weeks ago. They're going to a digital ruble. Fascinating. Globalism. While globalization gets destroyed, globalism rears its ugly head and gets on steroids. And as I told you, those digital things are going to be governmental. There's going to be two avenues. They're going to either regulation or they're going to ban it. And we have in the United States, while the digital ruble now comes to prominence here for the citizen of Russia, a private currency, a coin, if you will, Bitcoin, digital coin, is on the table to be banned, as we hear from one's Senate banking chairman. As I told you, the government doesn't like competition. And they are looking at, potentially, banning these things. I suspect they're actually going to regulate them because they can make tax money. And more importantly, they can track and trace everything you do once you do that. Because you have to be on this decentralized blockchain, don't you? Shows you how undecentralized it is. But on the table here, folks, not just regulation. Well, they might want to think about banning cryptocurrency. If it's not the government's. But at the same time, Peter Schiff, who, and I want to caution you here, I'm not promoting his stuff. I just got a link here just to be able to read from it. He's got his own thing going on. I guess he does well about what he presents, but I'm not promoting what he does. I have no clue about it. What I do want to say is he pops out all at this time because of an interesting sequence of things. And he predicts, he said to have been predicted the 2008 financial crash. And he now says that there's the total destruction on digital currencies very soon. He says this is crypto extinction, not just crypto winter or not a crypto ice age. This is crypto extinction. And then he'll promote the assets he likes otherwise. But at any rate, it doesn't matter. Look at someone looking into this thing who's also seeing it. I don't know his authority here. I'm just telling you, this is consistent with the ban going down the ban that hammer, if it goes there. But more dynamics are happening in order to cause that to happen as well. As I suggested, the dynamic of how they were doing it. You're going to be left to the Wild West. You're going to cause yourself some problems. The government then gets the opportunity to say, no, we're going to cut it out or we're going to regulate it. And now you're controlled while they bring on their own. And at the same time that Peter Schiff is saying that this is crypto extinction, you've watched those markets, the FTX thing, on and on and on. Again, I set up for the takedown in my mind, and I still see it that way. EU tightens regulations on cryptocurrency. Not going to ban it. We're just going to tighten the regulation. Crypto service providers will be forced to report transaction data to tax authorities. Exactly where I told you it would go. Once they bring on a problem that the society needs to be cleared of, they then have the power to tax those that are causing that potential problem. In this case, you heard it when they said money laundering. The crypto can be used for money laundering, for drug dealing. That was the statement of potential or probable governmental cause which they need to step in to regulate. Once they do that, those that are regulated pay the tax. That's how that works. So you don't want to get too much into causing trouble for yourself. Well, the government has the power to come in and do anything about it. The European Commission, EC, is planning to combat tax fraud and evasion in a crypto sector, making all digital asset service providers report transactions, including customers residing in the EU. Including means only, so that if you're an EU citizens only, we see the word including here, it's limited. But here where they have, just being involved in crypto now becomes the reason for being of the government to tax you. And to do that, they have to keep track of you if you thought it was decentralized and not and anonymous and all that. No, it's been planned this way. This is what regulation does. Now, in the United States, I don't know how people have seen it slip. It used to be $10,000 or something didn't come under scrutiny. I don't know how they got it limited to that. But anyway, $10,000, you didn't have to report. Then it was like something like $7,000, then $5,000, then $2,000. Now it's down to $600. I understand if you go through some digital currency exchange somehow on the Internet, PayPal, whatever, if your opportunity to give someone more than $600 comes into play, they're going to scrutinize that. How we as a free people allow that, I don't know, but there it is. It's dealing in that system. You've caused a problem, or they claimed it like climate. It's an existential threat that we have to regulate, and therefore we get to tax. We get to keep track, at least. But that's what it's all about. End of crypto extinction, as Peter Schiff says, starts to show up, not just underneath this FTX blowing up, but Midas Investments shuts down, taking over 55% of the customer funds. It was very interesting how they did it. They said that this was the cost of doing business. They had to extract that, and apparently those people who got involved with the Midas Investments in their crypto exchange agreed to that. So this company gets out with its millions and closes everything down and hands out some portion back. But this is the exchanges. This problem is what brings on, like FTX, brings on the demand for government regulation of the exchanges. It just brings out the little bitty hope that I have. Maybe there's a technology, don't engage in exchange. You really have to do it private. The Matrix is not a movie. It's got its own addresses here and there and everywhere that we're going to have to rely on. And there's going to have to be a different type of trust involved in how this is going to work. I'm not here to even have a knowledge even to fully explain or decide that. It's that's going to be the distinction. Anything that's a corporation, anything that deals in someone else's things the government identifies as a property is going to be under regulation. In this case, you're watching, they just shut the place down. No warning. Sorry. We did the best we could. And this is the failure of that system. This is what's going to send the signals. Until someone can fix this, the crypto looks like it's on its trail to extinction, as Peter Schiff has said. Schiff has said. I couldn't see the future of it myself. I think it's a cool technology, but I've talked about this over a long time here, what my apprehension is. As we find out within this digital space, in this social media construct, in the information of the internet, of battlefield of things, we move in to understand that this is a country level war that's been going on, and some nations play it better than others, and that causes the one that's getting beat up to look at themselves if they're any kind of an intelligent nation to protect themselves and or go on the offensive. We hear, again, coming out of Russia, an observation of this dynamic in the world that the United States has set in motion, and don't forget about that. And relative to the Comey swindle, relative to the setup, what is going on in the dynamic of the world being set into motion? Ivan Zhenko, China unveils a surprising new weapon in its information war against the West. The U.S. and its allies control the global media space, but Beijing has a plan to weaken their stranglehold. It seems that no matter what China can do, what it tries to do, it turns into be the bad guy, and the West is able to do that. Then it started looking at that condition. And it all is centered around this tool, this weapon against all civilizations, all societies, this thing called the COVID pandemic. Again, I won't go through all of it. It's just what they used and how they stripped everything. They broke globalization and they empowered globalism. But now there's still a contention. Remember, we do have the good cop, bad cop. We still have the two economic systems now bifurcated in order to cause some friction, in order to bring the rest of this up, and we'll have our own nationalities supporting each other here soon enough, as we see when the discussion here, when the summer, summing up 2020, a difficult year with the COVID pandemic and an escalation in the confrontation between Beijing and Washington, prominent Chinese political scientist Yuan Peng wrote, quote, "It no longer matters what is true or false. What matters is who controls the discourse." They go through and make an interesting observation about this. This is what they call here, what we're in is the post-truth era, as they identify it. And they go through a gentleman of an older time, a prior time. Those who can guide these feelings in the right direction, which is their opinion, the public emotion is shaped not by facts, but by emotions. And this theory and this execution on dealing with that is stated, those who can guide these feelings in the right direction are the ones who shape the information agenda. The emotions that are generated have become the discourse. The concept born among French post-structuralist philosophers, primarily Michel Foucault, is that right? Montreal, in the mid-20th century, has found itself at the core of global politics in the early 21st century. They talk of things here, if you understand the translation here, they're not, the control is upon the emotion. And so this is perception management 101 in my mind, the way we hear it, like Edward Bernays. Running back through the China having to look back through history to see where does this thing pop up again and who dealt with it and how did they successfully deal with it. And they deal in things, we're talking economy, it's not just in money as I was saying earlier, it's in lots of things that have value and can be transferred. And they talk about discursive capital. There's value in discourse. And the manipulation of that is where the power becomes, and they call it discursive power. And again, can't do justice for this here. I just pointed out, nations are looking this deep in this future that we're moving into, the digital age, the digital gulag, to be able to protect themselves and to be able to be influential in a world that is shifting, changing, because of technology, in a direction that even China has the lead on right now, and other countries are handing them this lead. The United States did it as well in the pivot to China. It wasn't military, necessarily, not the military you saw. It is a war, but not the military you saw. So China unveils a surprising new weapon. It's understanding how it's losing the information war and how it's going to change. Now, doesn't mean that there's going to be counters. What I'm saying is that if they are looking at it as a nation, maybe you ought to understand, and that's partly what I've been saying relative to the discussions I have, looking at language and what they do, what they say, what they don't say, keeping track of all the meanings as they do it, as they change, as the change agents change language and interpretation. We saw some of that with the definitional changes, which could not change the basis of your local law. So if you followed down the track of their information changes, you forgot about protecting yourself with the local law. You didn't realize it's irrelevant what they say. And people started to buy into it. If you did, then you could see really that they had to go there, that they were going to go there. And when they're there, you saw it. It's not even not an honor roll thing to do that. It's just part of what you need to do. As we start to see China working this thing out, they want to keep on the front end of this globalism position in the digital age, in the digital gulags as they're building, it's not just Russia moving quickly now to do a digital asset, a digital ruble. This is unheard of, folks. Just last year, right? I mean, everyone's like, oh, we're not doing that. We're not doing that. How many times reports did I say that? We're not doing that. China rolls out its first national digital asset marketplace. So this is the government controlling the entire subject matter, and you will have to go through that. Well, if you have to go through that, you have to engage, you have to be authorized, you have to be checked out, you've got to do your social credit to even participate. But the government itself gets involved. This is not much different than what I was saying. FedCoin, you're going to be involved with that. They could get rid of all the rest. The government doesn't like competition. The state-backed NTF platform will reportedly be built on blockchain. What else, folks? This is, again, I've been talking about this for decades, and people didn't want to agree. I don't know what that meant, but I did. I don't know where people put their minds. The blockchain is a chain. It's a chain of servitude. I don't know why that missed. Anybody had a different thought about it. So here's how the government starts to work it. China is preparing to launch its first state-backed non-fungible token, NFT, marketplace, as it continues to embrace blockchain technology. Dubbed the China Digital Asset Trading Platform, the NFT platform will be launched in Beijing on January 1st. It's been going, I guess. The platform will be a secondary market allowing users to trade digital copyrights, property rights, and collectibles. How quick? Digital property rights. Copyright law. They have copyright stuff, too. Interesting, huh? Like the United States. Pretty interesting. But this is all NFTs, and you can trade this under the auspices of a government control. There's nothing that's not going to be something like this underneath government control and checking. And all that value goes where? To the tax man, certainly. And all the money that got there to be able to buy those NFTs are going to be scrutinized on blockchain. So we already see the national digital ruble coming into the citizen. This is now being made available in China. But it even gets even better down in China, where it's about their national cash and where it's going. As we see that digital assets are easy to kick into gear. They just have a decision to make on the government. It's not like still thinking. They're not twiddling their thumbs about it. They're actually putting it into play. They don't put this kind of energy into it unless it's going to go into play and it's going to benefit them. As I said, what's going to benefit them in the FTX would be the ability to use that as that destruction as a reason to come in and attach itself to you. Senator Elizabeth Warren uses FTX collapse as a reason to introduce surveillance of all crypto wallets. All crypto wallets. I told you this was coming. Here it is. And it's gone. Again, the regulation, the scrutiny, the surveillance. Even though the two events are unrelated, they are going to put this in. It doesn't matter. There's no reason behind it. It's just that they use the example, the thing, in order to get what they want. Critics have called the bill unconstitutional and authoritarian. Well, of course it is. But when they put it under a public need, under public necessity, what are you going to say about it? You've walked yourself into it. Digital Asset Anti-Money Laundering Act. Was that any different than the digital asset from China? No. How is it all coming so close together as well? It just amazes me that people just want to shrug their shoulders on all this. Here's the point. Some of us can resist a while. A lot of us won't. We've got the habits already built into it. The form being a digital lifestyle in the form of credit cards, in the form of debit cards, in the form of EBT cards, in the form of anything other than a bill or a coin. Magic, really. It's a cool system. Magic. But now they'll take out all the way, and it's just have your phone, and they'll have you'll have your own little identifying code, a little brand that they'll give you. But this bill is going to say, we need surveillance on the crypto wallets. Why does a collapse of a company, a theft upon your assets, require that they look at you? There's also another problem. But at any rate, it's here, folks. They want that surveillance. They're going to decide that it's about taxes or whatever. It's a regulation authority. And who's behind it? This issue of sustainability is public-private partnerships. Corporate coalition pushes government to create digital ID infrastructure. Why? Because they're in on it. They make profit from this. What did I say earlier? There's not two masters that these CEOs are beholden to. No, it's just the shareholder and its profits. Major corporations will want to see the installation of digital ID. Of course. Of course. We talked all about this. It's not even news. The point is it's happening now. A group of private companies have established a digital ID blueprint. Were you involved in making that blueprint, folks? No, not at all. Encouraging state governments. Are you influential in your state government? Likely not. To implement policies involved in creating a digital ID system. Well, Real ID already sits there. Your bank accounts already sit there. Your tax account already sits there. Not hard to integrate at all. The blueprint was published by the Better Identity Coalition. How quaint. Better Identity Coalition. Who asked us? Nobody. But Better Identity Coalition, a group of 27 U.S. companies, including MasterCard, Equifax, AT&T, and more. And if those three front companies don't cringe, cause you to cringe, I don't know, MasterCard? Equifax, with all their data losses, and AT&T, the plunderer of the Internet relative to plans and things? Hidden info. If you look at their policies, their hidden liabilities they put on you? Folks really need to listen, read your policies. It's pretty fascinating. They've already got us by the throat and choking us. We don't even realize it. The group either wants to stop the worry about ID fraud or to profit from preventing ID fraud by pushing to normalize digital IDs. It's all about creating a threat of ID fraud, and then they're going to make profit from protecting you. But they're the problem themselves. This whole thing is a fraud. It's all made up. And then this, don't forget that it comes behind the sustainability crowd. All these corporations have a sustainability policy. They're pushing the same thing. JP Morgan Chase is involved. You see the pictures of all this. Microsoft is involved. LexisNexis, for those of you that might want to do the legal thing. Yeah, they're all involved. Wells Fargo, I said they got hit for millions and millions and maybe a billion in fines for mishandling. But no, they're pushing it. Why? The public-private partnership. These people are going to be the instigators of moving information and data to your FedCoin account, through to the holder, the trustee of that. They're saying it's in play, wanting to be put into place, but I'm telling you the technology is now here to amass everything that already exists. And all they do is they put a brand on it. And this comes along right along in the news in not kind of normal fashion, it seems. Cheryl Atkinson, I think she was a reporter at some time. Somewhere in my mind, the name is familiar. And then I see, I think she has a program. She may be still on TV called Full Measure, I guess. I'm just looking here now. She asked the question, China has launched a digital version of its currency. Should the U.S. do the same? Well, when you look at the picture in the video, they have a QR code. Nice big QR code. And it's by a machine, you buy your stuff and all that other thing. And that's the representation of the digital currency. It's your QR code. I've talked about the QR code. It's a barcode. It's a product code. In other words, people haven't figured out they are the product. And I'm going to show you, I have a story that came up, just kind of made me laugh here in a moment, showing you that it's about you, not the machine. It's about you, not the robot. That China has launched a digital currency. Should U.S. do the same? Well, the United States doesn't have to, because they have the people already complying. We have evidence of that as well. And despite, this is a past story, the politician in Alberta, Canada, said, we are not QR codes. The new Alberta Premier, Danielle Smith, apologizes for vaccine passports. Honorable, noble. Thank you very much. But I said at the time, I think I might have said it, that wasn't enough. You had to out the fraud. You had to out that it wasn't there. You had to out that there was no the virus. The science, novelly, but patently, there's no the virus. Scientifically, there's no vax. There's no test. Scientifically, there's no test. As a matter of communicable disease law, there is no vax. So you had to do that here, Ms. Premier. But you say, we are not QR codes. Now, months later, I want to point this out. I don't know that she was so right. If we go look, and we have a Twitter account here that's now suspended for posting a Whole Foods video that require you use to use a QR code to enter, even though some people say it was an exit. We see at the very end somebody entering and needing their phone to be read. And the promotion is you don't have to use the checkout. You can just go through, pick up your goods, and walk out. But you need that QR code. That account is gone. If you look at this link I'll send you, I'll provide, a lot of accounts that responded to that have now disappeared as well. I had to track down the video again, just so you see it. Whole Foods USA QR code shopping scan to get through the barriers, then tracking your whole shop source is from Tommy Robinson. They show the video. The woman is just can't understand it. She has to get this QR registration that she doesn't have. And understand, this is Whole Foods is now owned by Amazon. Amazon already does biometrics. All you got to do, they have the readers about your palm. I did a quick report on that. They're a little bit more advanced. But the QR code in China is the same QR code you're going to use in Whole Foods at this point to get in and get through. And the benefit is you don't have to have anybody, there's no checkers and all that. Well, they're also getting you to eliminate a bagger because your stuff is being put in your cart as you do it. So you don't have a lot of jobs are being missing, are going away here that they get you to do all this. And they do what? They get your digital QR code. That's your code, your code. Not for the store. It's you. It's a code for you. And we get to a little bit of, as we move on, we get a little bit of cue of that the QR code is for you. You have to give your own so you pick it up and it gets charged as well, right? You provide that. But we get a little bit of the problem that this is not for machines. Well, we see Amazon itself has a problem with these barcodes, with these QR codes. Here's why Amazon wants to kill the barcode. Barcodes work well for people, but not robots. So this whole food thing is for the people, not the robot, not the system that's keeping track, which is integrated, all right? I have someone who's going to be a denier of the integration of this by calling us a conspiracy theorist, even though for a decade I've been predicting it, and now here it is. I don't know about these people. But anyway, Amazon has found robots may be the future, but robotic arms are apparently no good at using the good old barcode. Barcodes can be hard to read and can be affixed to oddly shaped products, something robots can't troubleshoot very well. So these robots are getting rid of workers as well, but these barcodes are actually problematic. That surprised me. I thought they were written for machines. But no, barcodes are for people. You are the product. And so this is turns this Whole Foods thing into a little bit different, more creepy thing. But at any rate, there's detractors about what we think is going on with Whole Foods after that video. Can't go in and buy anything without it. It's like a loyalty. See, people are primed by the loyalty program as well. In fact, if you look in the video, you see people already in there. They're already consenting to this track and trace, and they become the employee without knowing it condition that their accounts are tapped, that whatever they do, it can be checked, that their system, their phone can be hacked again. Don't forget that part. But prepping a detractor here, prepping for the Great Reset, conspiracy theorists think Whole Foods QR code checkout is ushering in the new world order. Well, it wasn't just checkout. You had to go in with it, right? So they kind of keep track as soon as you enter in. And you don't get to buy without the mark, folks. That's the other thing. So the QR codes, these barcodes, are for people, not for machines. And this detractor, Clara Goforth, will go through the list of what it does, denying that it's all happening underneath a set plan, which I don't understand how, again, this is just an absence. She even explains in this article, just what I said, that Amazon already has a more efficient palm scanning system. that I've reported behind the woodshed. The QR system here is just a different type of form. Can you read that QR code to know what it does or says or means? No. And it's not meant for machines. So it's got another purpose. And she lists the Great Reset. She lists the social credit system. She lists the privacy concerns wrapped around this and says that these are just conspiracy theories. Well, I have it on good authority. Elon Musk, our king now, but whatever he says goes. He says that science now is to be questioned. And so we can't really be conspiracy theorists. We must be conspiracy scientists, I suppose. So she's kind of missing the mark here. The king has spoken, but we are scientists to question, and thank you very much. Finally, thank you, Elon Musk. Even so, that really nothing's off the table, and it's up to you. You can not listen to her going forth here, denying and dragging her feet, or you can look and see what's going on and who the players are and what their objective seems to be. I don't know what the objective is because I don't know the plan, but it sure looks like it's something that I don't want to buy into, and I don't want to, well, I don't have that money to buy into it. I don't have the token to do so, and I don't think I can amass the social credit to do so either. So it's my future is looking pretty bleak. I hope yours is too in that way, but we have a better future I think we need to pull together for ourselves where we need to be going instead of where we're being drugged to go. Relative to the conspiracy theory function and the and I'm not going to get into all that, but just the fact that someone would call you, label you that to dismiss you, and then list everything that is the thing that's going on and being denial of that. I did run across the thing I talked about last week, the store card for what, how many times, if this was a ball game, how many times conspiracy theorists have been proven right, and we're like way up into the 30s, I think, but I don't know how many are in here. We've got a list of all kinds of things. In fact, there's so many conspiracy theories that have turned out right. He's asking the question, he's asking for people to bring new conspiracy theories because the previous ones turned out to be true, and we've run out. Pretty good record, if you ask me. Again, people observing things. What I'm looking at here, though, is we're not responding in ways, at least I'm not aware of the what people are doing. We can do things in small ways to prepare for these long-term things, but they're going to these corporations and governments will outlast us. So I think it's a little bit different issue. As we see, it is the corporations running. They're all running together. They're running in a pack. There's a reason why they're doing it. PayPal launches integration with MetaMask Web3 wallet for Ethereum transactions. This would predict that the Ethereum is going to be okay, but it's going to be controlled. But PayPal's involved. They're all integrating. But they're working through and then being integrated with Etsy and places like eBay, and the major things. And MetaMask is really, what is it, the old Facepalm Facebook company, the old company. So this is all an integration of this digital asset stuff. There's not going to be anything not. Well, listen, they're going to utilize value carbon atoms. So, and you're wasting of them into the atmosphere, polluting, right? So that's how finite this starts to get. And I think nitrogen will be next. I mean, there's just not going to be an end to this going on and on. So don't think that they have they're running out of a sandbox to play in. It just starts to envelop the entire Earth to the point that we are maybe facing mass extinction. As a projection from these psychopaths are trying to foment the condition in order to get people to start complying, again, the fear thing. A study has found that the worst-case scenario, Earth could lose nearly one-third of its species by 2100. This is totally disregarding the fact that the Earth has likely lost 99% of its species since its existence. That's right, the last 1%. We're still here. But they blame pollution and climate change and depleting resources could drive up to 27% of the world's animal life to extinction, a new paper has claimed, making no suggestion that there'd be extinction anyway in certain species. But they say that they can prove it's pollution and climate change. Why? Because they did a study with a supercomputer to map out how interdependent food chains could collapse in the coming decades. Well, guess what, folks? I don't guess they didn't get the memo. Your supply chains have been pretty well wrecked. You're now into austerity. Remember, your life standard of living has to go down. They did that all on purpose. But they're just proving in that map study, the model, that the interdependent food chains could collapse, which means and tells you don't have an interdependent food chain. Make your own. All right, so they tell us something here, but they're trying to pose the fear. They conflate pollution with climate change. Now, pollution's different. Even if climate change was weather, pollution's completely different. That is something that we could control and we try to. And in my lifetime, it seems that we've done a fairly decent job in lots of areas. Yes, we can have more work, but it's not a reason to conflate a condition then create a fraud in order to prove a model, self-coded model, to prove your hypothesis. It's not science, first of all. It is fear-mongering. And it is what the governments work on. Again, as you saw, Comey swindle. That's exactly the model. I don't even know what the question is about how that was working and how well it worked. Now, we see immediately on the heels of these things, EU approves a CO2 tax on heating and transport softened by new social climate fund. Where that money comes from, I don't know. It's called leverage funding. They're stealing it from you in a different play. But here they have the CO2 tax. Now, they're bringing it in. The carbon market was sitting there. I told you it didn't go away. Now we have the carbon dioxide tax, right? The new carbon price will apply to petrol, diesel, and heating fuels, such as natural gas, whose climate warming emissions have continued to rise over the years despite attempts to decarbonize. Well, a message to the scientists, you're living in a carbonized world. It's how it works. The solar system is full of carbon. There's methane oceans on planets. Reality, Greta, no proof of a warming emissions. We're living in a variable relationship that the sun mysteriously just presented itself to scientists at NASA. Mysteriously. The guy behind the woodshed could look out through his life and say, oh, yeah, these things are variable. Doesn't take a NASA scientist and satellites to see it, looking at another planet. Decarbonize, that's how we got here. People forgot, I don't want to go through the whole list, but have people forgot that oil from them bones, them fossils? I don't know how many people have squeezed bones to get their oil, but notwithstanding that little problem, we're told that this came from life. It was collected up and pressed into spots, and then we get to pump it out of the ground. It was prior life on this planet, this carbon. Okay, stop making sense. I don't understand, but they're going to tax you on it. Remember, you're carbon-based, so you are a problem. And we have this. Someone's analyzing this condition, saying why EU carbon border tax will lead to a market destabilization, higher prices, and inflation. This is just the blowback problem that you saw in the sanctions. It's the same thing. A December 18th, EU governments agreed on the details of a first-ever carbon border adjustment mechanism. So you can't pollute another country, right? I mean, this is the way this thing's working, how stupid this starts to become. Why? Because if they meddle and they cause a problem, they can tax it, they can regulate. And they regulate you out of existence and the ability to continue. That's what that's about. This adjustment mechanism would impose a pollution price. Now I'll see the conflation. You exhale this stuff. Life is carbon, and yet now it's a pollution. It's the most fascinating. Nitrogen is in the air. What, 24%? What? Pollution? Your fields in the winter under the thaw create this stuff. What? Are we taxing this stuff for? But anyway, any excuse, any existential threat they can throw out that they get you to buy, well, this would improve pollution price on certain imports to the block of their countries. What's behind the measure and how could it affect the global market? Well, it just explains the blowback theory of being stupid and don't deal with reality. As Greta has been given a gift, I hope she accepts it, to rethink her position and stop being told by people who are abusing her, given misinformation. And this misinformation, it says this is scary. Someone recognizes when this tax came down, it didn't make the news. Well, why would the oppressor and occupier, the propagandist and the psychopath explain how they're doing it to you, how they take and create this base of funding for themselves to come and harm you some more in the future based on something that you did that you didn't understand that you were doing. The EU just announced a direct tax on individuals for heating, petrol, and tax, and nobody heard about it. as we hear it from a little video, and I thought it was pretty good what he points out here, Paul Joseph Watson, periodically referred to him, though not much. He was the first one to start pointing out, this is a tax against you, against what you need at the highest prices in the time you need it in the winter, and they're going to put more on you because they're penalizing you for needing heat. And we didn't hear much about it. And yet I've told you here through this broadcast, everybody who's exploiting this whole condition, and it's a fraud, and it's a lie, and it's set up in order to do that so they can do the exploitation. Well, we hear also from his neck of the woods, Brits struggling to keep warm at home. They don't care about what you need. Many are going to bed early to reduce heating costs in winter. That sounds real active, doesn't it? That sounds like an active quality of life, a standard of living that's increasing all the time. All this, remember, is all self-inflicted. This was all caused. It's caused by lies. It's caused by political affront. And I don't know how the people stay quiet about it, but apparently they're keeping warm. They're keeping warm by going to bed early. I hope some of you have some fun with that. But a quarter of British adults are struggling to keep warm in their homes as they cut back on unit energy use in the face of soaring costs. So when does the government and the EU come in? We're going to tax that, whatever little bit you are using. As we see the natural reaction to the problem of a cold winter and these blowback sanctions, global coal consumption breaks records. If these bureaucrats, these green bureaucrats, sustainable bureaucrats, were the answer people, certainly this is evidence they don't know what the heck they're doing because they don't have perfect knowledge and they'll never get it. They don't understand that there's a balancing act in the solar system relative to heat on a planetary scale and over a long time. A lot longer than any of their records are wanted to be admitted to, and certainly beyond the hockey stick. Skyrocketing gas prices was the key factor for surging coal demand, and an annual study of the IEA has shown. Like, we needed to know that. No, this is a part of the plan. What are they doing about that surging coal demand? They're taxing it. And the price is going up. The global energy crisis entailed by surging natural gas prices pushed coal use to a 10-year high this year. Market demand. That's a reality. Greta, please, listen. This is a natural thing that goes on, and it's all forced. They call it like solar forcing. It's not forced. This is our meeting amenable to fraud and not really having another say, another opinion, not defending ourselves. As we see, again, another lockdown now relevant to climate, not pretentious health problem. UK city defends new climate lockdown policy, a traffic filter program that fines residents for traveling outside their neighborhoods too often, is raising eyebrows. At least, folks. But this is where it's all going. You're watching this climate nonsense bringing on the constraint and the standard of living destruction and taxation and leverage funding for those two people to come and claim, these big investments to come and claim to abuse you further, has got to stop for you, I would hope. Otherwise, I really don't know more how this doesn't get better. We have to step up against this nonsense. You can't be afraid about putting out at least your opinion, doing it correctly, objective basis, and then putting it before some people and making sure you're one of the voices, one of the examples to say, enough's enough, stop. We're going to do what's real, based in reality, not your boogeyman. And there isn't just climate lockdown trafficking filters, but in the breakdown of globalism, there are still geopolitical commerce walls that need to be built now due to the protectionism that enters back into the scene. Enter also, again, the embargo. This is something I haven't heard of for quite a while. The question, can China break through the semiconductor blockade the United States is building? This has been deemed to be the silicon fence. It wasn't the Iron Curtain also referenced in the article, but this is what has been going on since at least 2018, where America's primary strategy is to restrain China of the top end, the toppest end value, international value chain of semiconductors. But China's not going to go down without a kick and a groan, and I think they're really, they've taken advantage of what we gave them, all the technology that we have given them, even though they don't have the highest end technology, and it's requiring the United States build allies to build this fence around China in protecting the supposed technological advancements by advocating to Netherlands-based lithography firm ASML to not export its most powerful chip-making machine to Chinese customers. So this is an ongoing thing that's been happening, what they say, 2018. But this is left now, as all these sanctions backfire, Beijing's now saw the writing on the wall. They're now in a rapid race against the clock to develop its own domestic technology. And it faced a daunting task, it says here, of building its own supply chain from the bottom up. And apparently they're willing and able to dump the money in to do this. In fact, we gave them all that that value to do so. And they're referencing all this as not being any different than the Cold War. So when we say globalization got broke, this invokes a different type of economic Cold War. And China looks like it is going to try and meet that with its speed bumps, and they're not a dumb people, so I don't know. There is a specialty about this, but they have a running start on it, I think. It's just a matter of getting their supply chain built up relative to these now protectionist systems that built up as the United States destroys and wants to destroy this globalization thing. Again, it was just a cover. And then we also have the thing that they'll invest in internally in the domestic blockade of your rights. Another nasty surprise, GOP sellouts gave Biden regime $11 million to target gun owners in repulsive omnibus bill. And I told you these omnibus bills are really dangerous. And there you can read the article to show how many places the Republican Party helped give over money to help defeat or interfere with your Second Amendment right. At the same time that a judge out in California, federal judge, to block a tyrannical California gun law provision, which would compel the citizen suing to actually pay for doing the lawsuit, which the judge said was had a chilling effect and tyrannical. He did allow other provisions to go on. His name is Judge Roger Benitez, who is now called Saint Benitez because he's a gun rights advocate, apparently, in a way. I can't say advocate, but he's giving over the Second Amendment a lot of power. His decisions are turned on their head a little bit by being held up by the Ninth Circuit. So there's this give and take. The government wants to put money, the GOP's putting money to have the Second Amendment attacked. And another blockade on our right to repair. New York passes a historic right to repair bill. Maybe not so historic as they end up getting it through. It took many months to get it to print. The governor signed it, but before that, the industry got involved to give again, themselves avenues of that may not have the teeth they were wanting to put in, and the right to repair bill is a law, but the teeth have been taken out, and the advocates of it were calling a little bit of a foul, even though they're saying that it's a good thing. And along those lines, the EU is going to require battery replacement much easier to be achieved by consumers, as we are given better rights to the private property that the government, that the companies are causing us to pay for and then not have access to. As we also hear, these batteries are blowing up and we need to get them out of these phones anyway. But this is the economic blockade starts to happen, and it's everybody's for themselves, the governments, the corporations. And so it's good to hear that there is some people fighting back and doing something in order to try to tear down some of these constrictions and local embargoes, domestic embargoes as well. So I hope something, as I said today, will help you out, get us into some protection mode. I think there's tough times, I think, coming in, and maybe nothing that's not good we can't weather, but it could be serious for us. And some people that are not so well put together. I'll be with you next week. Tech Tips, where nature will.
That's another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, journey with purpose.
opening up a can of whoop-ass feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.